Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You got Matt Miller on all the time.
Matt Miller.
Here I come. You ready?
Lead NFL and NFL draft analyst at Bleacher Report.
In the NFL, you need guys who have upside and potential, and you have to have something that kind of makes you special.
The Stick to Football Podcast.
We ain't got to talk about too much. We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it.
Going through college and NFL film.
You need to be just an MF-er out there where you're going to put this guy on the ground every play.
Matt Miller with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
An MF-er out there. Indeed, he is Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Good, guys. I missed you in that little week we didn't talk. Thought maybe we were breaking up.
Hell no. Better than that. Come on now. Now, there's all sorts of drama regarding what Joe Burrow hasn't yet said, where some are saying, look, if you say I want to be a Bengal and it's cool and being a Bengal is just fine, just say it. Just end the questioning. Just end any of the idea that maybe there could be some looming power play here. Before we get to the other quarterbacks of the draft, how do you see the top guy?
Yeah, well, Burrow is the top guy, and I'm with you. So I think that he could end all this speculation by saying, hey, I'm cool being a Bengal. And I've actually seen one quote where he did say, I'm just going to be happy to play football wherever I get drafted. But I think you could end a lot of the speculation by, I have a podcast, I do it three times a week. He'd come on anytime he wants, and we'll talk about this. But so I think he could end that. I think he is the clear-cut top guy. If Tua Tagovailoa had not had two high ankle sprains and a hip fracture in the last 2 years, I think we would be having a serious debate about who the top quarterback in this class is. But those are real issues, and those are real concerns. And so when you hear things like, maybe the Miami Dolphins don't like Tua, this is the franchise that famously passed on Drew Brees for Dante Culpepper because of injury concerns. So there is some precedent here, even though new ownership and new front office. So I think with Tua, you know, we're all enamored with his quarterback ability, his touch, his accuracy, his vision, his ability to move and make plays. But the injuries are a legitimate, real concern. And until we hear medicals that aren't coming from Lee Steinberg, his agent, I think it's right to be a little skeptical. Thankfully, next week will be in Indianapolis, and those things will happen. I think after that, you can kind of – I know I've used this analogy with you guys before. It's kind of like ice cream. What flavor do you want? Justin Herbert is 6'6", 240 pounds. He looks like a quarterback right out of Central Casting, big right arm. He can move around. But he's a one-read quarterback who struggled against good defenses in the Pac-12, and a good defense in the Pac-12 is like the worst defense in the SEC. So I think you have room to worry about him. I think he's more of a two-year project than he is a draft and plug-in guy. Jordan Love at Utah State looked great in 2018. His head coach goes to Texas Tech. He loses all his receivers, and he falls apart. He throws 17 interceptions. So I think decision-making from Jordan Love's a question to where, again, a guy you would love to see drafted by someone like the Saints at the end of the first round, he could sit for a year and learn instead of being thrown into the fire. And then you have the two Georgia dudes, Jacob Eason, who ended his career at Washington, and Jake Fromm. And they both, to me, are players that the NFL is moving away from because neither has great mobility. Fromm moves around better than Eason. Eason has a better arm. But neither guy is going to give you enough of a run threat. You know, you guys have Trubisky there. Neither player is as athletic as Mitch Trubisky. And you've seen firsthand what kind of issues can come up there.
I'm glad you said injuries plural with Tua because we're fixating on this the hip injury. But when teams are talking about a propensity, saying these are soft tissue, lower body injuries plural, and it came up. You mentioned the Saints. We were talking about Taysom Hill. He sees himself as a franchise quarterback. We're just looking at his history that when he plays a lot, he has season-ending injuries. It's just something you have to be concerned about here. And all the MRI machines will be lined up. They'll all be there, and they'll all have widely varying opinions. And it's still unsettled science as to what it means to be prone to some of these things, correct?
Yeah, and you know what? I like Lee Steinberg. He's really nice to me. He's been really helpful in my career. I mean, the guy's Jerry Maguire, right? You got to like that. But he's biased, and the doctor that they're going to see in New York is biased. 32 NFL team doctors are unbiased, and so that's the medical that I need to see. I'm not going to read the CAT scan. I'm not a doctor, but I want to hear from those team doctors, the same doctors that said, you know what, Jalen Smith might never walk again. One team, the team whose doctor did the surgery, thought Jalen Smith could play football again. They drafted him in the second round, and it's worked out for them. But you need that level of skepticism, not a guy who's, you know, been paid to do the surgery and is probably lining up clients left and right off the surgery, not the agent who's going to get a cut of the player's salary for the next 40 years. I want someone who says, can this guy not only play football for us in 2020, can he play football for us in 2025 or 2027? Because if you draft a quarterback in the first round, that's, in most cases, you're hoping at least a seven-year commitment, if not longer. And so I think with Tua, we have to dig into the things that Alabama did to keep him on the field that maybe weren't great for his long-term health. That last ankle procedure he had before the LSU game, I think a lot of eyebrows could be raised and a lot more work could be done digging into why that happened and he was allowed to get back on the field so quickly. Now, I'm not suggesting the ankle led to the hip, but I think you're right, Dan, in that, you know, guys who are broken and injured in college tend to be broken and injured in the NFL. You know, we can go across the board with guys who are injured a lot in college. You don't get into the NFL where everyone is bigger, faster, stronger, and a better football player and magically become a healthier player.
Matt, how many quarterbacks are in the top two tiers? How much does that stand to change from the combine?
Yeah, I have four in the top two tiers. I would say that Joe Burrow is in a tier by himself.
Fair.
An injured Tua is kind of the top of the second tier. I think that you could put Justin Herbert and Jordan Love in there. I will tell you, I have it ranked. Joe Burrow is number two overall on my board. Tua is kind of floating there at number five overall, but again, waiting on medicals. And then Justin Herbert is at 19. Jordan Love is at 20. So that's kind of how I have it separated out right now. And I think with Justin Herbert, I was talking to an NFL quarterback about this because there were some things I didn't quite understand about that Oregon offense. And he said, you know, if Justin goes to a one-read offense, if he goes to someone who's like a Sean McVay disciple, where they basically say, throw the ball here, he's going to be pretty good at that. If he goes somewhere like what Patrick Mahomes is asked to do in Kansas City, he's going to be lost because he doesn't have that quick processor where he's able to think and see things on the fly right now. Now, that could be developed. That's why I think he's a player that you would really like to sit for a year or two. And the same with Jordan Love. You know, you look at guys who throw a lot of interceptions in college. You generally throw a lot in the NFL, too. And so for Love, it's trying to figure out, was his, you know, sophomore tape in 2018 or his junior tape in 2019, which guy are we getting? Deshaun Watson threw a lot of picks his last year in college, and he, you know, didn't the first 2 years. And we've seen, you know, he doesn't turn the ball over a whole lot. So I think there is some type of precedent for when you evaluate a quarterback, you can't just look at the numbers. You got to look at what they had around them. So when you lose Matt Wells, when you lose all your receivers, you start to press to make things happen. Is that why you're throwing picks, or are you throwing picks because you're not accurate or because you can't read the field? For me, with Jordan Love, I think he forced a lot of those mistakes in 2019.
I would guess it kind of sounds like you're more likely that a quarterback drops out of that second tier than one jumps into it.
Yeah, I don't see Jacob Eason jumping in. I don't see Jake Fromm jumping in. I heard Bucky Brooks, or I read it, Bucky Brooks said, and I love this, that the NFL right now, they want scorers at quarterback, not shooters. Jacob Eason would be a shooter. He's a guy who's 6'5", 235. He's going to stand in the pocket, and he's going to rifle the ball all over the field, you know, like Drew Bledsoe. That doesn't work in the NFL anymore. You know, even Mitch, even Jimmy Garoppolo, you have to be able to move to win. You don't have to be Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray, but you have to be able to move to win. Jacob Eason can't move well enough. And so I think there might be teams like Tampa Bay where Bruce Arians is just going to say, hey, stay in the pocket, throw the ball 50 yards down the field. That's going to work. But I feel like the teams that like Jacob Eason or like Jake Fromm are going to be fewer and far between. You know, like if you miss it on Teddy Bridgewater, you're going to really like Jake Fromm in the draft, you know, because he's smart. He's accurate. Another player who lost a lot of what he had around him. You can hear Georgia and think, oh, my God, all the talent he had around him. But he actually lost a lot at tight end, at wide receiver, at running back. And that affected him this year on top of the fact that Kirby Smart is not, you know, known as an offensive genius. So I think with Jake Fromm, you at least feel like You did it for 3 years in the SEC. You're not very big. You don't have the strongest arm, but you're at least pretty dang smart, and we're able to see that and understand it better.
With the combine coming up, I don't know if I've ever asked you this before. Maybe I have. I'm always curious now, because we know so much about these guys before the combine even begins, how much expectation setting is there? It's almost like debate performance or primary performance where people around a player may say, you know, sort of like whether it's a 40 time or whether it's performance in a certain drill, where they know how to prepare the people watching him to not have something look glaring.
Yeah, I think that's where, you know, I try to do a good job of that as, you know, as I can on my platform with three podcasts and three articles a week, and you can't spend all your time yelling that. I hope the NFL Network does a good job on their telecast of explaining that. You know, it's funny, every year people get mad when running backs don't run 4.3, and there just aren't many people walking the planet who run a 4.3. So like a running back who runs a 4.4 or 4.5 or God forbid a 4.6 can still be really good. And I think this year, you know, we're going to see Henry Ruggs is going to run in the 4.2s. If he doesn't break the record, there will be people disappointed. There will be people on Twitter, I guarantee this, trash Henry Ruggs because he doesn't break the 4.22 record. And so I think when you look at Jerry Jeudy, Jerry told me at the Super Bowl he was going to run a low 4.3. If he doesn't, then I think, okay, people are like, whoa, he lied. Well, no, he's just a kid. He's 21 years old, and he probably got nervous and didn't run as well in Indy as he has been on the track wherever he's testing. So I think with skill players, we really do have to manage expectations. And I think those of us who have national platforms as draft analysts also need to explain that some of these drills don't matter. You know, Orlando Brown Jr. had probably the worst combine performance any offensive tackle could have, and he's one of the best young right tackles in football. So, you know, if an offensive lineman only reps out 8 benches, well, let's point to his 37-inch arms. Or, you know, if the guy runs a 5.6 40, let's point out that he's 370 pounds and focus on the things that matter. I know as the combine becomes more prominent, it's good news for people like me, but also like we got to do a better job explaining what matters most here, the medicals, the interviews, and then the workouts. And the workouts, the level of importance is almost flipped from the hype. Like the 40 doesn't matter that much. The bench press really doesn't matter. But they're the ones that we understand. It's easy to you know, sit on your couch with a Bud Light and evaluate a guy running a straight line and know that, oh, 4.4 is fast. It's a lot harder to, you know, for the average fan to dig in and say, okay, what is 3 cone time? What does that mean? What am I looking for? So I hope as the combine becomes more popular, people will, you know, take the effort to understand that. And the people who are broadcasting it will take the effort to explain those things too.
So, Matt, I'm looking around at free agency coming up here in a little bit and realizing that the Bears are fairly stuck with Charles Leno and Bobby Massey on either side at tackles. And I'm thinking, you know, as you see guys kind of get snapped up or re-signed and whatnot, is it safe to say that right now and probably for the foreseeable future, the only way to get a premier tackle, either left or right, is to draft and develop it?
I do think so. I mean, you can look at, you know, Nate Solder got some pretty good money on the free agent market. That hasn't worked out. You know, and Andrew Whitworth a couple of years, that did work out, but he was like 34, 35 years old. So I think in order to really develop or have a long-term answer, it is that draft and develop. And that's why Jack Conklin, who's 26 years old, is going to get a ton of money on the market. Yeah. And I'll say this, the Titans misplayed that. A guy who'd been hurt, you know, he's all pro as a rookie, hurt for 2 years. They don't pick up the fifth year option. Boom, he plays like an all pro again this year. So I think there's going to be cases like that where, you know, there might be a Jack Conklin that hits the market as a right tackle, but you're going to worry about that a little bit. Or, you know, there's going to be guys who, you know, like Jermaine Ifedi, who was a miss in the first round. Do you really want to, you know, bet Mitch Trubisky on a guy like that? So I do think that that's why we're going to see a run on tackles. We're going to see 5 or 6 tackles drafted in the first round because you're willing to take a chance on a Josh Jones out of Houston and try to develop him a little bit. You're willing to take a chance on Mekhi Becton, who has amazing physical attributes, but a little bit of raw technique, or, you know, to swing the bat on an Austin Jackson from USC. There's going to be a lot of tackles go earlier than they're ranked because of that, because it is a hard position to find. And there aren't many guys. Like, if you look at the best tackles in the NFL, they're all coming out of the first or early second round. I mean, you know, even in the Super Bowl, there were 3 tackles in the Super Bowl drafted in the first round, and the other one was a second round pick. So it's just, you have to find those positions early.
Are you scouting the XFL at all? And what are people saying about guys like Cardale Jones and some of the other names that we're hearing?
I will be honest, I am not, because this time of year is just so busy with our Draft 400 project where, you know, I have to grade and rank and write scouting reports on 400 guys, myself and two assistants. So my weekends are pretty much tied up there. But, I mean, I'm aware of it. I think everyone's kind of waiting to see, you know, more than two games, kind of a flash in the pan. You know, with like the AAF, there was a lot of excitement. A lot of those guys who got signed, I honestly can't think of anyone who made like a big impact. So I think there's a little bit of a wait and see, especially with right now, everyone in the NFL is focused on either the CBA or free agency. And so I think those pro scouts who would normally be texting, you know, about the XFL, they're worried about free agency and setting up their free agent board right now. So I think we could see something heat up a little bit, you know, in this dead period between the combine and the draft. But I would be surprised if there's, you know, a long line of teams waiting to sign XFL guys. Well,
just out of curiosity, how much better would the league have to be to cut through the work that you've got to do and that you hear scouts doing? I wonder, like, is there anything, any level of play that would be like, oh, Matt, you got to stop doing your top 400 here. You got to get yourself back into some XFL work. Or is there just no way that would happen?
Yeah, that would probably have to come down from the CEO of Bleacher Report. Like, if Howard Mittman sends me a text, like, hey, why aren't you covering the XFL, you idiot? Guess what I'm doing Saturday. So I think right now people see the XFL as, you know, deficient in a lot of positions. So it's going to allow, like, we know that Cardale Jones was going to be one of the best quarterbacks in this league, or, you know, that PJ Walker had some playmaking ability. But you kind of knew that already. So I think until the level of competition across the board rises up a little bit, I don't think we're going to see, you know, teams falling over to make Cardale Jones their number two quarterback even.
Do you like the NFL's new playoff proposal, cut a week off of the exhibition season, add a 17th game, and add one more playoff team, giving out only one bye to the team with the best record?
You know, it doesn't affect me, so I don't care. But I will say this. I don't think a league that can say they're worried about player safety can talk about adding more games. And then, all, like, just be honest. Hey, it's about the money. We can sell one more game a week. This is a league that I heard Colin Cowherd say this yesterday. This is a league that they don't negotiate their TV prices. They just tell you this is what you're paying for the games, and we all pay it. And so now, hey, one more regular season game. Oh, and more playoff games. Like, they're printing money. Jerry Jones, you know, needs another $350 million yacht, and that's cool. Like, I applaud you. You guys are innovative. Be successful. Make all the money you want. But just don't lie to us about player safety, because it's clear that you don't care if this is the path you're going down. So more football is always good, but, you know, I have been doing this long enough, and I have too many friends who play to act like it doesn't matter. You know, there's a lot more injuries, a lot more hits that these guys are going
to
take.
Matt, appreciate you. Get back to the damn list already.
I'm on it, guys. Don't worry.
That is Matt Miller talking football. We are going to talk some hockey with one of the foremost hockey experts in Chicago. Knows the Blackhawks inside and out. He's got the podcast numbers to prove it. Jay Zawoski, our very own executive producer, is going to tell us whether or not last night's disheartening loss was indeed an inflection point. And in the segment, we're also going to give away a pair of sweet tickets to see Monster Jam Triple Threat 3 at Allstate Arena February 29th at 7 p.m. That includes food and beverage.
A little hockey talk. Hawks lose to the Rangers last night, 6-3. Jay Zawoski's in next. You got
worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to
other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I'm a tender lover.
All right, before we get to the star of the show, give me a number.
Let's have it be 9.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Caller 9 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of suite tickets to see Monster Jam Triple Threat 3 at Allstate Arena on February 29th at 7 p.m. Food and beverages are included. That news is likely to bring out somebody like this man, Jay Zawoski, our executive producer, and somebody who follows the Blackhawks as closely as anyone anywhere. Last night really sucked. I was into it, too. I was watching the game, and it was a sprightly affair after two periods. What the hell happened? What did it mean?
Well, they came out flat as hell, as they've been doing lately, kind of scared to lose, very low energy, afraid to make a mistake, and they got down early very quickly and had to battle back. Robin Leonard had a bad game. He's given up 20 goals in his last five starts. He has not been good lately. And there's been some speculation that some of the trade and contract negotiation stuff has been affecting him a little bit. I don't know if I believe that as much as he's probably just dog tired from carrying the team all year. But he wasn't good again. And then they give up 5 goals in the third period. And you've got your top pair defensemen, Duncan Keith and Adam Boqvist, getting split over and over again. It was an all-around really bad night. When you look at the numbers, the shots on goal were pretty much even. The possession numbers were pretty even. But just the compete level for the Blackhawks was not there from the start.
So they're not going to get there. No. They're 8 points out of the second wild card spot. I think you could probably write that off at this point. What needs to be done for the future of this? Because I know you've written and talked about a bunch in the podcast that a full rebuild here seems incredibly unlikely for this team.
Yeah, there's no real sign that Stan Bowman and company are looking to do a full rebuild. They're not going to trade Jonathan Toews. They're not going to trade Patrick Kane. Maybe that's the right thing to do realistically from a hockey standpoint, but it's unrealistic. The real problem is they don't have any prospects in the system aside from defenseman Ian Mitchell, who hasn't signed with the team yet, and Nicholas Beaudin, who is a first-round pick that we haven't really heard much about. They've got an entire Rockford team full of fourth-line players. There's no one on the horizon, so they've got to add at this deadline some NHL-ready talent. Maybe they're not going to get top-end players, but they need some depth on this team because they just don't have it. That, to me, more than draft picks, is they've got to get some talent that is ready now.
What's up with Gustafson? Because the guy can quarterback a power play. The guy really has some skills, but it's the stopping the other team from high danger chances problem that ends up being the issue. That whole deal.
The defending part of being a defenseman. Yes, that's a problem. He will almost certainly be traded at the deadline. A lot of guys, his level, have been traded for like second and third or 2 seconds, something like that. So that's probably a reasonable expectation. He's going to get decently paid this summer. The Hawks can't afford it. They've got to give a new contract to Dylan Strome. Dominic Kubalik needs a new deal. Oh, and hey, they need a goalie. Maybe it's Robin Leonard. Maybe it's not. But they're going to have to pay somebody to be the number one goalie because they, again, have no one in Rockford ready to take on a full-time job. Callan Delia or Kevin Lankinen could be a decent backup, but they don't have a starter. And they've been trying to work out a deal here with Robin Leonard. And from what I'm hearing, the issue has been term, not money. So I don't know if Robin Leonard wants 5 or 6 years and the Hawks only want to give him 3 to 4. But they've got to figure this out, because if they're not going full rebuild, you've seen this team play this year. They absolutely need an all-star level goalie to keep them competitive most nights.
Agreed.
Percent chance they trade one of two goalies.
High. 90% chance at least one of those guys is gone. I think they're going to trade Leonard. That is probably their most valuable trade piece. And from what I've been able to glean about Robin Leonard this season, I don't think he's the kind of guy who will hold it against the Blackhawks for trading him at the deadline. He gets how the business end works. He was very impressed by how they pitched him to join the team in the first place. And he understands where they are at this point in the season. So the fear is if you trade him to a team looking for a goalie like Colorado or Carolina, that they just go ahead and lock him up right away and you don't even get a shot at him this summer.
So there is cap space available because of the moves you made with Seabrook and I forget the other guy on long-term IR. But DeHaan, thanks. So there's money there. Can you take a bad contract and grab draft picks? Or are the Blackhawks going to have to, because that would only be a one-year deal because they're tied up to money later, does that limit their ability to move that way?
I think you'd be able to do something like that. I propose on the podcast, and it's not something I've heard about, but just a sort of an example, if the Detroit Red Wings want to pick up a prospect, maybe they'd want to move you a guy like Mike Green, an aging defenseman, high contract, who's not doing anything for Detroit. That way, if you trade Gustafson, you have a guy that can fill his shoes for the rest of the year.
Body, yeah.
If you still think the playoffs are a little bit of a chance, I still think they're not at all a chance, but technically they're still in it. That's something they can consider. But I think right now the priority needs to be maximizing return for the assets you have, and it's going to lead to a painful end of the season, but it's the best thing to do going forward for the team.
If it's painful, what does that mean for Jeremy Colleton?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I don't really understand what Jeremy Colleton's future is. McDonough talks about, you know, holding people accountability, and I haven't seen it. I haven't seen anyone held accountable. You know, there's rumors that Stan Bowman signed a contract extension last summer. It hasn't been reported. Elliot Friedman had it in June, and recent conversations I've had have sort of confirmed that thought that, yeah, maybe that deal was signed and just not announced. So that would indicate to me that Stan Bowman's not going anywhere either. So it's hard to say. How can you fire Jeremy Colleton and keep Stan Bowman as your GM? You let him fire Joel Quenneville. You let him bring in his hand-picked guy. All of his free agent signings haven't worked out because you traded for Andrew Shaw and Calvin DeHaan, two injury-prone guys that, guess what? They're injured, and they're not playing and not contributing, and you have a bunch of draft picks gone for those two trades. So how do you let him try it again? How many more chances does he get?
The only answer to that is full rebuild, correct?
But they won't do that.
Right, and that's the thing. They won't.
They're in hockey hell, as Dan calls it, with the Bulls in the NBA.
It's so similar to the Bulls. When you thought that this year, well, you know, we just shore this up, and we get a Tomas Satoransky. And
Calvin DeHaan.
Right? You get a Thaddeus Young, and you have these veteran guys who might just be right, and then we make a run at it and it fails on you.
You have to wonder, with both teams, what a better coach would have done, right?
Yeah, but I'm not going to damn Jeremy Colleton by comparing him to somebody who's generationally bad as Boylan.
I don't think that Jeremy Colleton is a bad coach per se. I think
you're right.
He could be a successful coach down the road. But to bring him in the way they did, replacing a legend in a room full of guys with skins on the walls, many of them that are older than Jeremy Colleton, how is he going to tell Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith how to play hockey? With a straight face.
Well, they didn't take to it very well.
No, they didn't.
I mean, judging from the stuff that Duncan Keith has said about being able to do what no longer being able to operate as they see fit, having a little more structure in there. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. You want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and earn a $5,000 signing bonus? Visit the Sprint store on Lamont Road in Darien between 1 and 3 p.m. this Saturday. Jay, zooming out, how much of all of this, the situation that they're in, call it hockey hell, call it what you want, how much of this really is still because they play in a hard cap league? You're just growing old with Taves and Kane and Seabrook and Keith, and they chose to do what they had to do when they were in their window, and this is simply the price of being in the championship business.
Well, the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't in a situation. The Boston Bruins aren't in a situation. Here's the Stan Bowman problem, and I do think still Stan Bowman is an above average NHL GM, but Bowman gives market value and term and no movement clauses. You can't do all of those things. You can't give aged Brent Seabrook an 8-year extension for $6.875 million that still has 4 years on it after this season.
I forgot it was four.
With a full no movement clause. You can't give it all. Say, look, if you want the money and you want the term, I've got to be able to trade you. Bowman doesn't do that. When you look at the Boston Bruins roster, guys like Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, they're all paid under market value because those guys took that $1 million less or whatever to stay with the team and keep them competitive. Do you remember Richard Panik?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
He was out of hockey. Came to the Black out of hockey in the NHL, rather.
Yeah.
Came and played for the Blackhawks, had some success, and was a free agent at the end of the year. He said he signed immediately because they were blown away by Stan Bowman's first offer. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you're offering me that. Yes, absolutely, we're going to sign that. They had to trade him the next season. Stan Bowman doesn't negotiate. He negotiates against himself.
It's like when you tip in tipping in a foreign country and the person looks at you and goes, thank you, sir.
Yes, you right. don't go to Richard Panik, who was out of hockey, and say, how about $2.7 million?
It's like how Jim Hendry got Alfonso Soriano for an extra
Jim Hendry's cool barrel.
$40 million. Yeah. One thing I wanted to back up on. So I'm watching the end of the first period. The Blackhawks have the power play. That goes by the boards, and then there's a breakaway down to the other end, and Leonard turns it aside, and the time expires. So as I'm catching my breath and realizing that I got to make some food and watching the period break stuff, they're talking a lot about the trade deadline. How does – and I was a little stunned that as much of the conversation that centered around the Blackhawks was also centered around Brandon Saad. How does the rest of the league look at Saad, do you think?
An affordable – young player under control for another year. $6 million in this NHL is not that much anymore.
So a notch above a Flyer?
You mean like just...
like taking a Flyer on a guy? Not a Philadelphia Claude Flyer.
Giroux or Gritty. This is a guy that you'd have for another season at $6 million. And you can never have too many power forwards. Those guys are invaluable. Brandon Saad's experience, especially in the playoffs, he's having a really, really good year. Even though the numbers aren't through the roof, aside from Kane and aside from Leonard, he has been probably the most consistent Blackhawk. So he's got some value. I don't think they need to rush to trade him, but if some team's going to blow them away, he's only 27 years old. Think about how long he's been in this league and what he's accomplished. I think if I was a team in the playoff race, Brandon Saad would be an absolute priority for me to add, and maybe the Hawks can take advantage of that and get a decent prospect and a pick or two back.
You mentioned Gritty. Is there a world where the Blackhawks could trade Tommy Hawk and a future first-round pick for Gritty?
No, because Stan Bowman signed Tommy Hawk to a $10 million contract with a no-movement clause.
Why did Alex DeBrincat go from 41 goals down to 14?
Well, I don't know the answer to that specifically. He's had some really bad luck. He has not been going to the places to score where he typically goes.
That's what I loved about his game.
He had the post on one last night from that spot.
I've never seen a post hit more cleanly either.
Oh, my God, did he ring the bell? I mean, my Lord.
Absolutely. I think a bit of it now is the fact that he's struggling to score is getting to him. Mm. You see it affecting his game. You can read in his body language that he's frustrated with the fact that he's struggling. Here's another factor, too, and I'm not saying this critically. It could be something subconscious. Alex DeBrincat, in his first two seasons in the league, was overcoming all the criticisms that he was too small. He's never going to make it. He can't make it in the NHL. A guy his size will never have success. He scores 41 goals last season, signs a $6.4 million contract that kicks in next year, last summer. Maybe now that chips off his shoulder a little bit. And he's already proven himself. He's got nothing more to show. And maybe now he learns, kind of like what Javier Baez said, I can't just get by on talent. The chip on the shoulder matters. Preparation matters. And maybe this season he'll learn some sort of lesson about how he prepares and how he goes about the daily routine.
So he's a cub.
Yeah, basically.
It's a rough year to learn your human, but that's learning your human. Or a cub, as you say. That works. Man.
Jay, thank you, sir.
Thanks,
Jay. You're welcome.
That segment brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Great food at a great price at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I'm not sure what you have. I know you were...
I've got some music, actually, to play for you. There are musical tie-ins to two stories. One is going to be nostalgic for me, and one will be nostalgic for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What kind of army Would you, as a nation, would you send in to fight a plague of locusts?
Sharks with lasers on
it's their heads. Very specific kind of army. And also, we have the end of an entire police department that was marked by an unusual protest.
Also, sharks with lasers on their heads. The Midday Midway is next. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
First thing we always do in the Midday Midway is tell you what we started the show with. The first portion of the show was a lot of baseball stuff, getting into the whys and wherefores of the move of Chris Bryant up to the leadoff spot and the news that Anthony Rizzo would then be batting thereafter in the number two spot, looking at some of the numbers, the motivations behind it, and what it may say about Bryant's immediate and medium-term future. I think what this does is, barring some injury in Atlanta or Washington, it moves any decision to the trade deadline based on the performance of this team and Bryant's performance in that leadoff spot, then affecting his future. We had football conversation with Matt Miller talking about the combine and rules changes and quarterback potential, and then sort of broke down the unfortunate situation the Blackhawks find themselves in with Jay Zawoski. It's not because of Jay Zawoski. It's an unfortunate situation.
It's because of Jay Zawoski. Right. So this from CleveScene.com, because you know I get as much news as I can from CleveScene.com. Okay. It's everything going on in the Cleve. In one of the stranger publicity stunts we've ever come across, the hip-hop group Bone Thugs and Harmony, one of Cleveland's best-known musical exports, which did you know Bone Thugs were from Cleveland?
I think I
did. I feel like I had that rolling around in my brain. Bone Thugs and Harmony has just announced that it has entered a sponsorship deal with Buffalo Wild Wings and will change its name, I'm not kidding, to Boneless Thugs in Harmony.
If you're going to sell out, go for it.
Bone Thugs is a group where majority rules, says manager Steve Lobel in a statement. So for now, the name change will stick. The group is in the process of updating its social media handles and Spotify profile in the coming days, signifying it'll be known as Boneless Thugs in Harmony until further notice.
And wasn't this one of their songs with the Cavaliers were playing one of the songs? What was it, like the one with the word thug in it to make fun of Beeline for calling
yes,
him thugs?
Absolutely. According to a press release, Crazy Boneless, Flesh and Boneless, and Wish Boneless all agreed to the name change after tasting the wings' new juicier recipe. You either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
The police chief in a New Hampshire town took it literally when he was stripped of his duties at a local board meeting, disrobing to his underwear and walking out into a snowstorm. Give it up for Richard Lee. He has been chief in the small town of Croydon for 20 years, and on Tuesday night, the three-member select board voted to eliminate the one-man department and move to 100% coverage by the New Hampshire State Police. Lee, who was at the meeting, was told to turn in the key to his cruiser, his guns, and his uniform immediately. Listen, he went into an office that he shared with town officials, and he took off his clothes before the board chairman. He says, I gave them my uniform shirt. I gave them my turtleneck. I gave them my ballistic vest. I sat down in the chair, took off my boots, took off my pants, put those in the chair, put my boots back on, and walked out the door, Lee said. He didn't have spare clothes or a ride home. He walked nearly a mile in a snowstorm before his wife picked him up. He said if he had left with his gear, he didn't want to face the possibility of being arrested. And as he took off his clothes, the chairman said he didn't have to do that. But Lee said those were the orders. And he's discussing what happened with his attorney. So turn in your badge, turn in your gun, turn in your pants.
Socks.
And he's like, all right, okay, let's do this. We're going to do this. I'm walking out in my underpants in a snowstorm. Hot damn.
That's amazing. All right, what if I told you that there is one preseason ranking in Major League Baseball done by an esteemed stats guy that has the White Sox ranked 4 and the Cubs ranked 23. What would you guess that statistic has?
Flaws?
It's slanted toward Cubans?
No! This is Eno Saris's annual preseason craft beer rankings of Major League ballparks.
Okay.
This is good. And we'll go through this probably later on as we get closer to spring training, but it just came out and I was too excited. I'm not going to be here tomorrow, so I had to get it to you. The
Jack White lookalike is going around.
He looks exactly like Jack White. It's crazy. Guaranteed rate field is number 4 in baseball when it comes to craft beer availability and accessibility and quality, I guess. Eno is a craft, I mean, he's that guy, right? Top beer got a 9, average beer got a 9, accessibility got a 9, and he writes, in what might prove to be an innovation that it will eventually spread to most ballparks around the league, the White Sox put a craft cave in 2017, a beer bar with plenty of taps, but even more impressive beer cooler. He goes on to write that obviously one of the big things about stocking craft beer at a ballpark where you got all those people and that kind of stuff is an unused tap, something that gets real popular and then dies out throughout a game, costs a lot of money for the team to maintain empty tap, right?
Sure.
So the idea of having a beer cooler and all those cans back there in the right field corner is perfect for a ballpark and something that he expects a lot of ballparks around the city, or around the country rather, to follow up with and kind of invest in. He loves the idea. It's 4th overall. The lead, though, for the Wrigley Field write-up, just get an old style, really. Still, they've got some solid craft beer offerings, does Wrigley Field. They've got Bell's Oberon, which he loves, and why wouldn't you? And both ballparks are heavily invested into the Revolution stuff, which is all great, too. 23rd overall for Wrigley Field.
That's the Antihero IPA?
Oh, yeah. Antihero's a good one. And Bell's, too, which you and I both love and have had many of over the course
Oberon
of the last year.
Oberon is their
quality
flagship,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah, that's the one that Eno kind of highlights the most here for the craft offering.
There is a plague of locusts that has wreaked havoc across East Africa, and it has now reached China, specifically the Xinjiang border in the far west of the country where it meets Pakistan and India. Pakistan declared a national emergency due to food shortages. They said it's the worst locust attack in decades. Well, guess what China has decided to do? They have unleashed a legion of troops, 100,000 of them to be exact. They have sent in, and there's video of this that's astonishing.
Okay.
They have unleashed 100,000 ducks.
Look out!
100,000 hungry ducks marching down a road to face and eat the enemy locusts. It's an amazing video. And they're referred to as the duck troops in Chinese media. They've been used successfully before, more effective than pesticides. That one juvenile duck can manage 4 square meters of land, can rid 4 square meters of land of locusts by gorging on them. Here's what's fascinating. As I thought, too, the locusts themselves are edible by humans and are considered a delicacy when battered in breadcrumbs and fried in oil.
Really?
And what happened in 2017, farmers who lost crops due to the locust plague caught them and sold them for food. So they said the corn harvest would be reduced for sure, but catching locusts brought me a lot more money, said a local farmer who told Beijing News.
That worked out.
But they said this is the worst in 25 years. Here's what I find interesting, to square the circle on this. The locusts are edible and tasty. 100,000 ducks are being sent to fatten themselves up on the locusts.
Oh, yeah.
This is China.
I'm in.
Right? How good are these ducks going to be now?
Duck is a thing,
yes,
man.
Yes. They're feeding on this fantastic protein. It's like even better than corn-fed beef or like the pigs in Italy that they're eating nothing but pistachio nuts.
We got to buy Chinese duck futures.
Exactly.
That's what we got
to
get in on.
I want to buy the rights to some of these locust-fed Chinese ducks.
We should get a duck, too. We should see if we can get a duck over here. Right? Eat the duck. See what,
or we take,
see what it works like.
There's Sunwa on the north side that does nothing but ducks.
Oh, I love duck.
I know. Chinese. Like now, duck. Now that's it. We're getting Chinese duck. Like, get a order a crispy duck over here ASAP.
Yeah. Needs to happen.
Yep.
Now, where was this in China?
Oh, you're going to make me read the thing again?
God, no. I just want to make sure it wasn't
Pyeongchang.
No. Or possibly
Pyeongchang.
No, not
tonight.
Neither of those places.
No, it's my Mandarin is not great, but I believe it's Xinjiang.
Okay, cool.
Xinjiang?
This is...
I want duck now.
This is awesome news for me.
Is there a Chinese place that delivers crispy duck around here? I'll buy
it. Yeah, up the way on Michigan. Yeah, all right, we're looking it up over the break. We're going to find it. This was awesome news for me and anyone who spent a whole lot of time playing Nintendo 64. Tony Hawk Pro Skater, right? The game that came out in the, I want to say it's 98, something like that, and started, as you know, if you played it, you know it started with this song. Superman by Goldfinger. It was just, the entire soundtrack was populated with a bunch of punk music.
This sounds like your childhood.
That is exactly childhood. Anyone who's listening right now and played the game, yeah, of course it is going, oh my God, I know this level. I know when I have to hit my 360 kickflip. I have to do all this kind of stuff. On Tuesday, Tony Hawk announced on Instagram that the documentary Pretending I'm a Superman is coming out. It's going to be a documentary about the Tony Hawk Pro Skater video game series. It's premiering at a film festival February 29th. He's going to be in attendance, all that kind of stuff. It will take you through how the game got created, what went into it. Apparently, there's a whole bunch of ridiculous stories because getting a bunch of skaters to just sober up for a damn minute so they can come in, make the game, skate around a little bit, all that kind of stuff. Guys like Chad Muska and Bucky Lasik and Steve Caballero are all going to be featured in the documentary. This is so cool. I spent days playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And really, when you look back at it, in terms of like open world games, you know, like your Grand Theft Autos and all this kind of stuff, where you're gradually taking those 64-bit games into a larger space, Tony Hawk Pro Skater is one of the first to open it up like that.
Is Dave Muska in the game?
What about Dick Butka?
Oh, yeah. I don't know, I just did an ollie over here. I was like grinding it.
Joe Cowley's got names of potential new Bulls front office guys. He advanced the story a little bit, and he's going to join us to tell us what's going on, even though, as he says, it's still a John Paxson production in hiring the people who are apparently going to run the Bulls. I'm a little bit confused, I have to say, but Joe's going to figure it out, and we got to get Chinese food.
Yeah, we got to get Chinese food. Joe's next. You got the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.